Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome. I want to play a game.
Ever been looked at weird 'cause you a freak? Well, we got a place for you 7 days a week. Jungle Rider Radio, tune the fuck in. Get up on the line and everybody wins. Ever been frowned upon 'cause you a weirdo? Well, come join us 'cause we one badass show. We do this for all of you in the family. Come through and kick it with Havoc and G.
Woo-woo, yo, what's good, motherfuckers? Welcome to Juggalo Rider Radio. I'm your host, Havoc. Co-host Ghetto G is actually busy right now with Twisted. Unfortunately, I'm in Connecticut, so I ain't, had a chance to go. But, fuck it, this is story time with JRR now, so, which means we busting out every single fucking story that the one and only Jump City's got to tell us. And now these are all off of the new audiobook, The Road. So what do you say we get started? This is Joe the Gray Wizard.
Joe the Gray Wizard. This one time, there was a friend of mine. His name was Joe the Gray Wizard. Now, Joe wasn't really a wizard per se. He was more of a warlock because he practiced the Wiccan belief. And what he was most known for amongst our crew was empowering stones. He could basically take any kind of stone and bestow it with luck or protection or love. And then you would gain that benefit along those lines as long as you held those stones in your possession. And that's basically what Joe the Gray Wizard was known for. Now, this one incident happened that I'll never forget. And again, it was one of those things that, people would probably dismiss, at some point. Like if they seen it, they might be astonished by it at first, but then as time went on, they would probably just dismiss it out of their mind. But I'll never forget this moment. And, retelling it, it might not sound that fantastical, but it really did amaze me when it happened, when it happened, when it happened, when it happened, when it happened. All right, we used to go to Chicago once a year to this arcade. It was a virtual reality arcade called the BattleTech Simulator. And now, I'd go down there with a group of my friends, and we'd usually spend a weekend down there. Now, anybody that's ever been to Chicago, they know that it's incredibly windy. At certain parts of the year, they don't call it the Windy City for nothing. And this particular time was in wintertime. And where we parked our car was like about a quarter mile away from where this arcade was, because it was in the middle of the downtown area. Parking was always for shit. Anyway, we parked our car and we walked to the virtual reality arcade. And as we're walking, there's this incredible biting wind. It was crazy cold and just blasting you in the face, And there was a really strong force to it, to the point where it was uncomfortable, It was the kind of shit that caused your eyes to water, and then they would just freeze, because it was so fucking cold at the same time. So anyway, we go to the arcade, we went to the arcade this one particular day, and we got our gaming in. And when we were leaving, it was nighttime, so it was even colder. And most of my friends were walking up front, and me and Joe, the Gray Wizard, we were about a block behind, and we were walking. And this wind was just nonstop blasting in one direction right into our faces. I looked at Joe, the Gray Wizard, and I said, man, I wish this fucking wind would stop, And as soon as I said that, he looked over at me and he bowed his head as we were walking forward, pushing into this wind. And he extended his hand out in a stopping motion. So here he is walking, bowing his head in deep concentration, like looking down, not really looking at anything because he had his eyes closed, but in deep concentration, and he was holding his hand out in front of himself, right? All of a sudden, this wind that had been blowing for hours, you know what I mean, nonstop, suddenly stopped. And not only did it stop, but all of a sudden I felt like a gentle pushing of this wind behind us. You know what I mean? The whole time it was blowing in one direction, which was like straight onto us as we were walking. And all of a sudden the wind was like gently pushing us from the back. It was almost like the wind was wrapping itself around a shield that was in front of us and like curling into the back. You know what I mean? Like curling into the back around the shield. And I looked at Joe as I was walking, and I couldn't believe what was happening. And when we got back to the vehicle, I wouldn't let it go, man. I was like, Joe, how the fuck do you do that, man? You stop the fucking wind. Are you serious right now? I was like, how do you have these powers? You know what I mean? And he just looked, you know, he was a real humble dude, you know what I'm saying? He just kind of looked and smiled. You know, like he would never tell anybody anything about his magical powers or how he went about changing the world. That always stuck with me, and even years later, I would ask him, you know, Joe, man, when are you going to tell me how you stopped that fucking wind, man? This Joe the Great Wizard, I had, you know, I was friends with him for many years, and there was another incident that happened where we were actually playing a game of Morton's List. Now, Morton's List is a game that basically you roll randomly on this table and it gives you a random activity, something to do, you know, and all the activities are basically something that someone would do for fun. Anyway, we happen to roll sands. And we happen to be playing a game with Joe the Gray Wizard. You know, so we talked about it and we decided that we were going to hold the sands right at Psychopathic Records, like right at the office. And Joe the Gray Wizard, who was very versed in seances, would actually conduct it. So we were like, all right, cool. So we went there. We basically got all the stuff we needed. We got four candles. They were brand new candles. And he needed a sheet of glass, you know, which we got. And so the glass was, he explained it, was going to be the gateway into the spiritual realm. And so then we conducted the seance, and we were trying to reach a really good friend of mine who passed away in high school. He actually committed suicide. His name was Kenny Veach. And this was a really good friend of mine. Like, I've tried to reach him in several different seances throughout my life. All through middle school, I hung real tight with this kid, like, every day, you know, without fail. And then when we went into high schools, he actually moved away, and we kind of separated. Anyway, he committed suicide. And when they found his body, he was actually in his garage, you know, he kept the car running, you know, to kill himself. And when they found his body, he was actually in the garage with his body stretched out toward the door leading out of the garage. Like he had changed his mind last minute and he didn't want to commit suicide, but it was too late. He passed before he got to the door. Anyway, so we decided we were going to try to contact Kenny Veach, you know, because I always felt like I never got closure, you know, with him. So like that was, you know, when it was brought up, who should we try to reach? You know, that's who I wanted to bring up, because like I felt like if we can somehow, you know, come in contact with him, I would like to have my final words with him. So anyway, we were conducting the seance, and Joe the Great Wizard, like when he did seances, he would always begin it with open the gate, you know, and he explained it. Seances are dangerous because whenever you do a seance, you have to open a gate. The problem is with opening a gate is you never know who's going to come through that gate. And he explained that the glass was a representation of that gate, but it also allowed him to peer into the other side so he could see what was about to come through the gate. You know, using his warlock abilities, he was able to perceive the spiritual realm, at least, you know, a part of the spiritual realm by use of the sheet of glass. So anyway, we were holding the seance, and we were trying to reach Kenny Beach, and he opened the gate, and, you know, he warned us all, like, before we even did it, you know, this could be something that might get fucked up. I mean, so by opening the gate, you never know what's going to come through. So we started doing the seance. At one point, we asked for a sign. And just as he asked for a sign that there was a spirit, like, close at hand, you know, that could assist us in finding Kenny Beach, we heard a heavy thump on the roof of the building. So we all looked up, and we were like, you know, kind of like, whoa, that was fucked up, you know? We were kind of looking around at each other, and we heard the thump again. So then we were like, is this fucking real? You know what I mean? No, it's probably just like something weird. Even though we didn't hear no thump at all the rest of the time. So then he asked the spirits to help us to find Kenny Beach. So he looked down and he said, can we get another sign? And as he was saying that, on the table were those four candles. Now, each candle was casting a perfect shadow because they were all brand new candles. And this shadow was like around the base of the candle, and it probably extended out about 2 inches. Anyway, as he asked for the second sign, all of a sudden, one of the shadows on the candle begins expanding across the table. And we were like, I think I was the first one to notice it. I was like, whoa, look at that shadow. And it was just creeping, growing. Then it was 3 inches, then it was 4 inches. All of a sudden, it was about like 7 or 8 inches expanding across the table. As if it was like I don't even fucking know how to explain it. But it was one of those things where it just flipped your mind. Like, you're looking at it, and you're not even, your mind is having a hard time processing what you're seeing. Because it's something that's just, it's breaking the rules of this world. Like, it's not supposed to be happening. So as it dawned upon everyone what was going on, as the shadow was expanding across the table, all of a sudden, Joe the Great Wizard, he looked down at the mirror, and we looked over at him, and you just see this look of complete terror on his face. Just complete and utter terror. And then he said, close the gate, close the gate, close the gate. Like, he screamed it out. And then we're like, all of a sudden, boom, the shadow went back to normal. The thumping on the roof stopped. And we're all looking around like, what the fuck happened, man? Like, what's going on, you know? And Joe said that he's seen some sort of demonic form that was coming through the glass. And he said that it was wolf-like in nature. The way he described it was it was a wolf-type demonic creature that was trying to break its way up through the glass to get out into our world. And he was able to, at the last minute, he was able to close the gate to keep it from entering our world. Part of the reason that I wanted to tell you the wind story is because I want you to know that Joe the Great Wizard, he was not prone to, like, bullshit stories, or, you know, he wasn't into the displays of his abilities or his powers. So I never questioned his abilities and, like, his stones that he gave out and that he empowered. Like, I always took them as if they were gold. You know what I mean? Because I knew that in some way, somehow, he was able to actually utilize real and true magic, you know, to affect, you know what I mean? To affect this world. World, world, world.
we are back. What's up, Chill?
Yep.
Yeah, man. Being Spider-Man.
Yeah, that should be awesome. I'll be hella going for Mary Jane.
Well, I'm talking about the fact that I got the Amazing Spider-Man for PS3.
Oh, hell yeah. That's a kick-ass game.
Hell yeah.
Shoot. Yeah,
I think we got Kyler with us. What's going on, Kyler?
What's up, man?
Like I said, being Spider-Man, doing story time on Juggalo Rider Radio, presented by Jump Study.
Awesome.
But nah, chill, man. Fucking, I went to GameStop today. They got a thing with a buy two pre-owned games, get one free.
Oh, hey, that's dope.
Hell yeah, I got the Amazing Spider-Man, I got Ghostbusters.
Hell yeah.
And I got some game called Brink. I blame Ghetto G because he's the one who mentioned it.
God damn. He went to that Twister show, too.
Yeah. Which is why we're doing story time on JR. And that's why I just focus on the game and y'all got something to listen to.
Hell yeah.
So, what did y'all think of that story right there from Jump Steady?
Man, that was pretty dope. Shit, I like the part where they was in Chicago. She was fucking dope. That nigga stopped the wind and shit. I'm like, damn, that's fucking crazy.
Well, we got plenty more. I mean, there's about five stories altogether. Chill, you've already heard one. But of course, we'll be playing it again just to the effect. We're playing the entire fucking audio book.
Hell yeah, that's the shit.
What do you say we move on to the next one? This is Jump Study's story about the woman of his dream. And no, it's not a porno for y'all who are curious.
Hell no, dude.
The woman of my dreams.
This next story that I want to tell y'all is about a ghost or something, an entity that's been haunting me my entire life.
Huh?
It has cropped up throughout my life, starting from when I was a young boy until right now. It's always been a mystery to me whether it's actually a ghost or a haunt, you know, some spiritual entity that has been, like, within me and, like, around me throughout my life for some reason, or if somehow it's someone that used to be in a past life, and the past life, like, the memory of that life, even though the memory of your past lives are all suppressed in the back of your head, in the back of your mind. It was so strong, the memories of this person were so strong, that somehow those memories are somehow filtering through from my subconscious mind into my conscious mind at various moments throughout my life, so that it appears that it's a ghost. But whatever the situation is, this thing, this entity, this person, if you will, has been haunting me my entire life.
Now, it started when I was about 6 or 7, or maybe a little bit younger than that. And from that early age, like, there isn't too many things that I can actually remember. But I remember there were nights, there was, like, many nights that as I laid in bed trying to go to sleep, I would hear a woman calling my name. And it would usually take place like right as I was about to go to sleep. Like, you know, still awake, not totally awake. But then I would hear this female voice call my name. And it would just say,
Rob.
Right? And it would be real close. As if there was a woman hovering over my bed. Even though there was nothing there. And she would say my name.
Rob.
And then I would freak the fuck out, of course, even, you know, as a little kid. What the fuck? I'd usually hide under the covers. I would scream for my mom, Ma! Ma! And then my mom would be like, go to bed. You know? She would get annoyed because it was happening so much. So this voice haunted me for probably about a year. You know, it wasn't every night. I'm not even sure how often it happened, but I just know it was many times. Like, you know, like, it might have been, like, you know, once a week, or it might have been two times a week. but it was always the same female voice calling out my name,
Rob.
And I had no idea why. After about a year, the voice finally went away. Like, it just totally went away, and years passed. And in some respects, I even forgot about it. Like, you know, like, I wasn't really thinking about it or dwelling upon it too much. You know, maybe it was just my childhood imagination type thing. Fast forward through the years, I was probably about maybe 9 or 10 years old when I had this dream. Now, in this dream, it might not be exactly a dream. It was more like a vision or not a vision, but it was more like a scene in a dream. Okay, because all of a sudden, boom, I found myself inside this van, okay, and the van is turned up on its side, and the whole front windshield is shattered, okay, it's all spidered, you know, and there's fucking glass all in the van. Now, I'm in the driver's seat because the van is actually up on its right side, as if it had been involved in this huge accident. I'm in the driver's seat because, you know, the steering wheel's right in front of me, and I'm looking around, and I look down, right, toward the passenger seat, and inside the passenger seat is this woman. Now, it's a white woman. She's got black hair, and her face is completely smashed in. Horrific. It's all bloody. There's fucking glass everywhere. And she's looking up at me, and she's saying something. Now, when I woke up from this dream, I woke up and it was just like I was in a cold sweat, and my heart was racing, and I was just super fucking panicked. You know what I mean? It took me probably about a couple hours to actually like calm down. That dream was so powerful that I never forgot it. There was a significance to it, a weight to it that was just all powerful. Fast forward through a couple more years, I found this cat in my neighborhood. You know, it was kind of like a stray cat, a dingy gray cat. And, you know, it was probably like an adult cat. So I snuck the cat into my house, and I had it in my bedroom. You know, I was like, you know, petting the cat and everything. And, you know, I was kind of unwinding, about to go to sleep. And the cat was laying at the end of my bed, right? So all of a sudden I hear the cat hissing. And I look up and I'm like, whoa, what the fuck, man? And it's hissing at the end of the bed. And when I looked up, the light from the street, you know, the street light is coming through my window and reflecting off its eyes, you know what I mean? So its eyes are like, you know, glowing, and its back is arched and it's hissing for no reason, you know, at least none that I could see at the time. And I freaked out and I panicked. And believe me, like, I love animals to death, but when I looked up and that thing was all arched and hissing and with the glowing eyes, I kind of kicked it, you know, not really kicked it, but my feet were under the covers, and I just kind of like, I flung my feet up so it propelled the cat off the bed, you know? So the cat flung in the middle of the room and it scattered. As soon as it hit, it was like, did this quick little hiss and it scattered and disappeared in the room. So I'm like looking, what the fuck, where'd it go? You know, but it's all dark in the room, you know, some light coming through, but I can't tell where it is. And so I stopped and I tried to listen and like hear for it. You know, and my heart was racing, and you know what I mean? I was kind of like terrified because I didn't know if that cat was crazy or what. If it was like a rabid animal or what was going on. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, that's when I heard the woman say my name again.
Rob.
And it was out of nowhere, and it was close, as if she was like right above my bed. Just like when I was a kid all those years ago. Like, I had even kind of like forgotten about it. But when it happened, there was a familiarity to it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I knew this woman, you know what I mean? But at the same time, she terrified me because it was just like this disembodied voice just floating in the room. And when I heard her say my name, I fucking panicked. I ran out the room. I was like, Joe, you know, I got my brother up, Joe, there's someone in my room, you know. We ran back in the room, turned on the lights, we started flipping over beds and shit. Like, we're like looking all around, you know what I mean, trying to find out, you know, what was going on. And we found the cat, and we let the cat out, but that was it. You know, I didn't hear the name, nothing, you know, the whole rest of the time, right? You know, so, you know, eventually I was able to get back to sleep probably like, you know, near the morning time because I was so worked up, you know, it freaked me out like really hard. And I started remembering, you know, when I was a kid, you know what I mean? Some years pass and I joined the Army, you know, so I go through basic training. And then you got your advanced individual training or AIT, right? So I made it through basic training and all that. Now in AIT, we're in this giant day room. It's like, it's got like, it's all bunk beds with stand-up wall lockers next to them, okay? And there's probably about like 50 people in the room. Now my friend is sitting on the bed, so I'm getting everything ready and I'm talking to him. You know, I'm talking to him normal, you know what I mean? Like, just, you know, having a normal conversation with the guy, you know? And, you know, I'm standing up. All of a sudden, like, I'm looking at him, and I'm in mid-conversation with him. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, bam! I have this incredible vision. And it's the only time in my whole life where I've actually had a vision of something. It was a straight-up, super powerful vision. And all of a sudden, I was there. I was in the van. The same van of my dreams, right? The van was on its right side. The van had been in this terrible accident. The front windshield was all smashed up. It was daytime. Everything's all bent and twisted out of shape. I'm in the driver's seat, and I must have had my seatbelt down because I'm not falling, even though it's on its right side. So I had to have been strapped in. And I looked down at this woman who I know without a shadow of a doubt I love. It's killing me to look at her with her whole face smashed in, all bloody. You know what I'm saying? She's got black hair, white woman. You know, she's probably like, I couldn't really tell you how old she was, but I want to say she's maybe like young adult. And she's looking up at me from the passenger seat, and I see this terror, almost like a sadness in her eyes. And the amount of emotions are flooding through me. And she looks up at me, and she's saying something to me. And as she's saying something to me, I can now see what she's saying. In the dream, I couldn't really see it. But here, in this vision, I can clearly see what she's saying. And even though I can't hear it, I know what she's saying because I've seen it on people's lips a million times. She's saying my name. She's looking up at me, and she's saying, Rob, you know what I mean? Like, in a state of, like, shock. So, all of a sudden, bam, I'm out of the vision. I'm standing in the day room, and there's tears running down my eyes. And, you know, the guy I was talking to, like, my friend, he's just looking at me like, what's going on? What's wrong? You know what I mean? And I can only imagine what he was seeing. Because, like, I was just talking to him all normal, like, and I probably just blanked out. And all of a sudden, these tears are coming down my eyes. I don't even know how long I was out. And he's just, like, trying to shake me, like, what's going on? So, nothing, man. I was like, nothing. I just ran out the room. Now, as soon as I got out, the only thing I remember is I sat down, and I sat there for a while. You know, in order for my adrenaline and the flow and everything just to really come down. And for everything to even out, you know, it probably took about 3 hours.
Now as the days pass, I wonder when she'll return. I wonder if it'll be as I drift off to sleep in a vision or even in some twisted wrecked van along the highway. I know she was always close to me, haunting me for some reason, for some purpose. Whether she's a ghost of forgotten memories or a future event that is still yet to happen, it remains one of the greatest mysteries of my life and one that I'm not so sure that I want to know the answer to. The answer to. The answer to.
Back. So what did y'all think of that story right there?
Tight ass.
Hell yeah, man. Fucking. And funny thing is, you know, like, all these stories are everything. Oh, that's like. Actually happened in Japan. I don't kind of know.
That shit was pretty tight.
Hell yeah. So what do you say we go for another one? Because I kind of got to take a shit anyway. So here we go with Jump City's story about the Whitehaven Sanatorium.
Whitehaven Sanatorium.
So back in the day when ICP was signed to Jive Records, we used to take many trips back and forth to New York. And we would drive all the time. And it was always... Pretty much it was like me, Joe and Joey, and Alex Abbas. Like, and we used to take these business trips out to New York, you know, just to discuss, like, music videos and stuff like that. So these drives along Highway 80 were pretty boring, especially when you pass through Pennsylvania, because it was all woods and, like, mountains, and there really wasn't much to see, you know, besides the beauty of nature. So anyway, one of the times when we were coming back from New York, you know, we were passing through the eastern part of Pennsylvania, and we were noticing all these, like, big-ass fucking mountains, you know. They don't look like your traditional mountain, you know, with all rocks and with ice on the top, but they're these huge, like, mountains covered in trees. The only way to correctly describe it is, like, a gigantic hill, you know what I mean, that went up, like, crazy high, and, so we decided, like, I came up with the idea, like, just to break up the monotony of the drive. Hey, let's climb one of those mountains, you know, and as soon as I said it, everybody was like, all right, hell yeah, let's do it, you know. So I was like, all right, the next big-ass fucking mountain we see, we're going to pull over and climb that bitch. So sure enough, we came around the bend, and there it was, this humongous-ass fucking mountain. It was just going high up into the sky, you know, and this was in the middle of the day, and it just looked awesome, you know, and we were like, all right. Fucking Tesla the Ninja, we gotta climb that bitch. So we pulled the car as close to the mountain as we could actually get, and then we got out, we started just cutting through the woods, you know, and it was deep ass woods, and the grade just went straight the fuck up. Now the first thing we came across when we were climbing up this mountain was an old crumbling stone wall, you know, and this wall basically went to the left and right as far as we could see, and surrounded the apex of this mountain, okay? So the wall was pretty huge, and it wasn't that tall. It probably stood about 4 feet tall. So we started walking along the wall just to try to find a way to get into it, you know, to get past the wall without having to climb over it. And that's when we seen this sign. And the sign said it was all, you could barely read it because it was all, like, just kind of faded through time and, you know, and it was like there was all these vines overgrowing on it. So we actually had to clear it a little bit away from the overgrowth just to read it. But it was the Whitehaven Sanatorium. We all started saying, whoa, what the fuck is that? You know what I mean? Like, what the hell is a sanatorium, you know? So we were like, okay, so, you know, it was a little bit of a mystery there. Anyway, we finally found an opening through the wall. We went in and we kept climbing up. And further and further and further. I mean, it probably took us about an hour to get through the undergrowth and all that, get to the top. Now, the first thing we noticed was a building. It looked like a huge, ancient, run-down, abandoned facility that had it had probably about 6 to 8 large, three-story tall buildings that looked like hospitals. I mean, that's the only way to describe it. Like, but not any hospital that I've ever seen or we've ever seen. It was basically hospitals from like the 1940s or something. They looked very stark, without character, like just straight boxes, you know. They were L-shaped, and they had many, many windows on the sides. And there was like these giant white steps that went up in this kind of grandiose way with these giant pillars on either side of them that you would enter into these buildings. And so we looked around and we realized, I mean, for lack of a better term, it was a ghost town. Like completely abandoned. Altogether, there must have been at least 20 buildings, you know, including like the houses and the giant hospital type buildings. There was an abandoned church in the middle of everything. There was some other buildings that, you know, were completely abandoned, that it was hard to tell what they were. So we started to explore these buildings. Now, the first thing, when we went into one of the hospital buildings, there was just this feeling of foreboding over the whole place. Like, it just had you on edge. Like, everybody was, like, kind of scared as they walked around. The hairs were rising on your arms, you know, and you just felt uncomfortable, like something wasn't quite right here, you know. Even in the, you know, it was broad daylight and everything, and it was just like, still there was this like feeling of dread. Now, exploring through the building, one of the things that I noticed that I think is worth noting is the fact that there was very little graffiti anywhere in the building. It's like, not only was this place abandoned, but nobody went there. You know what I mean? It was like a place that probably the locals realized was like, you know, stay the fuck away from that place. You know, you don't ever want to go there. So anyway, we explored a couple of these buildings, and the unease as we were exploring them intensified. Some of the rooms, there was like, they were filled from floor to ceiling with furniture that was just all thrown in there, like broken chairs and fucking filing cabinets and shit all piled up. And dust was everywhere. Most of the windows were broken. So finally, we got to the roof of one of the hospital buildings. And I looked at my brother, and as we stood on top of the roof, and we could overlook like the whole forest, like we were on top of the mountain, on top of this three-story tall building, overlooking this like relatively beautiful landscape of just rolling hills and mountains and trees. And whenever me and my brother would get into a situation like this, and Joey, it's something we started when we were little kids, you know, we would yell out, "Ultimate Warrior!" You know, just as a show of like triumphing something, like we beat it, you know what I'm saying? We conquered it. We came, we explored, you know, we beat it. So we all screamed that out at the top of our lungs, you know, and it just echoed through the hills. And as soon as we did that, we noticed all of a sudden these hunters came out of the trees, like, you know what I mean, like real far away, like hundreds of yards. But they came out of the trees with their rifles, and they were kind of looking up at us. And we were like, oh, shit, you know, we probably ruined it for them, you know, spooked all their game or whatever. We were like, let's get the fuck out of here, you know. We all got all amped up and shit, and we started, like, running through the building, and, you know, we wanted to get out of there before we got killed by some hunter, like, Deliverance style or something. So we fucking just kept running, and we ran down the side of the hill, and, you know, and basically we made our escape. So anyway, like, we went back home, and I started to do research on the Whitehaven Sanatorium. Now, what I came up with, researching it on the internet, is that it was basically built in 1901. And from 1901 to 1956, it served as a sanatorium. And basically what a sanatorium is a place for patients with tuberculosis to go to isolate them. And for most of them, they would die there. Tuberculosis was like it's basically a disease that attacks the lungs, and it's easily spread through like coughing and sneezing and stuff like that. So when somebody caught the disease, they were sent to a sanatorium to basically stay until they eventually were cured, you know, they stopped having the signs and symptoms of it, or they died. So throughout the course of its history, over 25,000 people actually went there, and were isolated there, half of which died. So you think about that. How many thousands of people died right on that spot? So it occurred to me that this place is a spiritual haunting ground. You know, all the ghosts, all the people that died horrible, slow deaths right on that spot. That's where they would end their lives. And some of them, it took years. They suffered for years before they died. So it really started to dawn upon me why this place was had such a dreadful a feeling, like why it was so intense. Now, after 1956, the place was turned into an insane asylum. Okay, now back in those days, in a insane asylum, the prevailing methods of treatment, they emphasized segregation from society, physical containment in padded cells, restraint, and shock therapy. Basically, all the horrors that you hear about insane asylums back in the day, this is where this shit took place, on the same fucking grounds. It's almost like the ground itself was tainted with this evil. Throughout the course of its whole history, anything that's ever been done there has all been revolving around death, suffering, torture, just the worst of the human experience, you know, the worst of the mortal experience. So there's probably many, many spirits that are still dwelling upon the grounds. Now, it was at that moment where I came up with a ninja mission. Now, ninja missions to us throughout our days since early childhood was whenever you had an idea to explore, to ban a building, or, you know, sneak into a foreign country or whatever the fuck the case may be, you would call it a ninja mission. And you would present it to our crew like, man, I got this fresh-ass ninja mission. We're going to do this, you know. And so my ninja mission was we were going to spend the night at the White Haven Sanatorium. Just the idea of it terrorized me. So I got together with a group of my friends, you know, and we basically, I pitched the idea to everybody. And basically I got together a crew of about 8 people. Now, Joe and Joy weren't able to go on this particular ninja mission because they were busy with other things. But Alex, who used to be the president of Psychopathic, he was there, and about 7 of my other friends. And we loaded up in 2 cars, and we chose the day that we were going to go, which was in the beginning of October, and we drove there. Now, when we got there, you know, we decided that we were going to park the cars far enough away so that they wouldn't be bothered, they wouldn't be, parked illegally or something, the cops would find them. So we actually parked the car in a neighborhood in Whitehaven. Now, we had everything we needed for the ghost hunting experience. We have the Ouija board. We had writing utensils and supplies for ghost scribing. And, you know, we had cameras, voice recorders, everything. You know, we came well prepared. So we basically got to the edge of the mountain, and we climbed it just as the sun was setting. And we decided that no matter what, we were not going to leave those grounds until the sun came up, no matter what happened. That was the ninja mission. So when we got there, the sun had completely set. Okay, now, we decided that we were going to break up into small groups that was going to be basically 3 people each, and separate and start exploring the buildings. And then after 2 hours, we were going to all meet back at the abandoned church to talk about our experiences. So we split up. Now, I was with Tall Jess, who's one of the co-creators of Morton's List, and also Brad. And we separated off, and we started with exploring one of the hospital buildings. Now, entering this building in the dead of night with nothing but flashlights was an experience that's almost impossible to describe. I mean, the only kind of safety net that we had was the fact that we were with people, you know what I'm saying? But we entered this building, and a lot of times we kept hearing noises. So we'd, oh, shh, you know, just stop. And we'd sit and listen and be quiet. And you just hear all these noises. Like, you could swear in the background, you could hear, like, voices talking, people walking. The building, of course, was shifting in the wind, creaking, even groaning. And it was hard not to let your imagination just start running wild, you know. And so then, as long as we didn't hear anything real close to us, we would kept going. We kept going. We kept moving through the building. But every once in a while, you'd hear this loud boom, like this loud bang. You know what I mean? But it was almost like a thud, like real close. Like, there's just no way to describe it. And then we'd stop, and we'd all be looking at each other in terror, our flashlights moving around. You know, what the fuck was that, you know? So we got to this one room in particular that it was on the third floor of one of the hospital buildings. And we entered it. It was a corner room. And the door was shut. So we opened it, and inside this room was completely abandoned. All the paint was peeling, all chipped. In this particular room, none of the windows were broke. And when we left the room, we left the door open. So we were about halfway down this hallway when all of a sudden the door slammed shut. And we all stopped, and we all looked at each other again, all crazy, and we looked back at the room. And, you know, your adrenaline's all flowing, your heart's beating 100,000 times a minute, and you're just like, you know, you're just looking around like terrified, like, oh, shit, what do we do? So we went back there, and we decided we had to confront our fears. So we went back there, and we opened the door again, and we just looked at it, and it was just sitting there, and we like, went into the room, and we were, like, looking around to see if anything changed, and nothing had. So we started leaving again. We got about halfway down the hallway. The door was still open when suddenly it slammed shut again. So we were like, oh, shit. And we just started running. Like, just the panic just overtook us. And we were like, get the fuck out of here. And we just started running for our lives. So we hauled ass all the way out the building and got outside. Now, right about when we got outside, we started like yelling for people, you know, hey, come here. And pretty soon everybody gathered to our location. They're like, whoa, what's going on? And we're like, man, we started explaining it. The door slamming shut, da-da-da. So then everybody was like, all right, fuck it. We got to go back there. You know, this is probably a haunted room or a haunted area. We got to take mad pictures. So we went back to that room, and we sat in the room. First, we took a bunch of pictures, you know. Then we tried the ghost writing, which is kind of like where you let your hand go limp and you start writing stuff in the hopes that like a ghost will like kind of possess your hand to start writing to communicate. And Alex, he started talking to the ghosts, you know, like he was like, if there's a ghost here, can you open the door? Because we had shut the door when we came in. After we got done, we left, you know, because like we were probably there for about a half hour and nothing was really happening. So we left, and this time we shut the door, you know. So we were walking down the hallway, and it was me, Jesse, and Brad were the last to leave. And we were about halfway down the hallway when the door suddenly opened. Like, we heard the click as if somebody turned the knob, and we saw the door swing open. You know, we looked at each other, we looked at the door, and we just fucking ran. You know what I mean? Because, like, we didn't fucking know what to think at that point. Like, It was the very thing that Alex asked it to do, you know, to give us a sign, because the whole time the door was shutting, it was slamming shut, and now here's this door opening, you know. So we basically took off, and we caught up to everybody. You know, we frantically told them what happened, and everybody was pretty unanimous on not going back there. Okay, so then after that, like, we explored for a little bit more. Like, we were just coming in the random rooms, snapping pictures and all that, and then we finally survived the night, and as soon as daylight started coming up, we got the fuck out of there, because the whole place just creeped us the fuck out. Now, here's the thing about this ghost hunting experience. When we got back, there was about like 6 different cameras that people were taking pictures with, and we developed the film. You know, and we listened to the tape recordings, and the tape recordings had some really weird, like, kind of like background shit going on, but nothing definitive, you know, like we didn't hear no voices on there or anything like that. But when we developed the pictures, you know, we developed them all together and we took everybody's pictures and we, you know, we started sifting through it. And I don't know if you're familiar with ghost orbs, but there in the photos, there's ghost orbs everywhere. And all of them are hovering right next to people's heads. They're just chilling, like, right by their fucking heads. And sometimes in some of the pictures, there would be, like, three or four ghost orbs all, like, hovering right next to their heads. And the thing that makes it, to me, that makes it so remarkable is that's in all the photos from everybody's camera. It's not like there's a glitch or something from one camera or whatever. It's like in all the photos, they're all the same. The only other evidence of ghosts that we found was in one of the pictures that I developed. It was just a random room, and I just snapped a quick picture of that room. Later, when I developed the film, there floating in the window are 13 ghost orbs. And the thing that's so amazing about the photo is some of those orbs are in front of the window and some are behind the window, because the panes of glass, which creates a tic-tac-toe type pattern, the orbs that are in front of the window, you can see they're transparent, so you can see the lines from the tic-tac-toe glass-shaped patterns behind it. But the ones that are outside the room, those tic-tac patterns basically stand in front of it. So it's quite clear that some of those orbs are in the room and some are outside that room, but they're clustered right there by that window. As if there's just, like, for some reason in that room, there's just mad ghosts just chilling all in that area. You know what I mean? So that fucking creeped me out. And that remains one of my most prized possessions, that photo. Because to me, it's clear evidence of the supernatural world. Like, I don't even know how you could deny it.
Man, what did you think of that one?
Shit, that was awesome. I loved the fucking Explorer Centauri. Especially that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. This fucking audiobook shit is pretty fucking dope. I mean, we're not really used to hearing Jump State do something like this, but it is definitely dope.
It is. It's fucking horrorcore.
Now, there's only two more stories left.
Oh, hell yeah.
The last two are The Witch Haunt and then The Road.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you want to hear first? The Road or The Witch Haunt?
Witch Haunt.
All right, so here we go.
The Witch Haunt.
Everybody emits a certain energy about them. Now, whether this stems from their spirit or their soul or whatever you want to call it, everybody has an energy that you can feel or that most people can feel. Like, some people, they're not as attuned to others. For me, I always felt like I could tell a lot about a person just by being close to them. By being in proximity to them, I could kind of feel what kind of energy they were emitting. Now, sometimes this energy is like, would make me uncomfortable. Like, you know, you ever meet somebody and the first time, you know, right away, you don't even like them before they even say anything. You can just kind of get a sense for them that there's something wrong or foul about that person. And then sure enough, as soon as they start talking, you suddenly realize why you felt that way. it's apparent because, yeah, they are, that person is off, or that person is evil, or that person is corrupted. Now, some people, they even have the ability to see auras. Now, I've never been able to see an aura, but when they look at a person, they can kind of see certain colors that only that they can perceive, you know, with their psychic abilities or whatever you want to call it. Now, throughout my life, I've only encountered maybe two times that I've sensed something in somebody so evil that it made me afraid. One time that this happened was when I was just driving down the road. Now, normally when I sense somebody's aura, you know, it has to be like several feet away. Like, I have to be close to the person, at least in the same room with the person. Anyway, we were driving down this road this one day. I was with a group of my friends. I was in the passenger seat when there was this feeling of immense evil coming from this car in front of us, probably in front of us about like 30 feet, and it was in the right lane. And I was just drawn to it. Like, I looked at it, and I was like, whoa, what the fuck? You know, it was just emanating this intense evil and corruption. You know, and as we started getting closer to it, like, I didn't know what to tell my friends because I didn't want to freak them out or whatever, like, I'm crazy. But it intensified as I got closer to this car because it was slowing down in the right-hand lane and we were catching up to it. So finally, I was like, I just said it, man. I was like, man, there's something fucking crazy evil in that car right there. I was like, just keep going, man. Just keep going. Like, don't slow down. You know what I mean? So as we passed it, I couldn't help but look over, and it was just the old man, like, from the outside. You know, if somebody was looking at him, he just looked like a normal person. But to me, like, I could perceive and feel this, like, evil just emanating from him. And it was then that I realized that not only are there corrupt souls on this planet, but I believe that there's demons as well. Or perhaps people that are so corrupted in their spirit that they have manifested into demons or are host to demons. Now, this one time, I had a direct contact with an actual demon, and I'll never forget it, and it was the most horrifying moment in my entire life, like my most horrifying moment that I've ever experienced. So I was laying in bed one night sleeping, and I was probably about 14 years old or so, maybe 15, and I woke with my face in the pillow. Okay, so I was suffocating. Like, that's how I woke up. Like, I woke up because I was dying. And when I woke up, not only was I suffocating, but I was completely and utterly paralyzed. I could not move. So I was laying there, face down, suffocating. And that was not the most horrifying feeling that I was having. The fact that I was suffocating or paralyzed. It was the fact that I felt this presence that was in the room. It was behind me and off to the right, something standing there right beside my bed. And even though I couldn't see it, I clearly felt it and knew it was there. And it was causing me this paralysis. It was causing this to happen. Like, it completely had dominion over my body, my physical body, and I could not move. And all I could think about was getting away from this being, this entity that was there in the room. All I wanted to do was get away from that. And the fact that I was dying was secondary to the fact that I wanted to get outside of the presence of this evil force that was there in the room. So my mind was completely in panic. I was completely and utterly terrified. I could barely think, but somehow, in all the anarchy of all the emotions that were flooding through me and the complete terror, I realized that if I could just move one of my fingers, if I could just concentrate and focus on one of the fingers of my body and move that one finger, then somehow I knew that that would allow me to somehow escape. And so I concentrated all my efforts, and I was screaming in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, I was fucking completely panicked. But somehow I was able to concentrate enough to move one finger. And as soon as I moved that one finger, I was actually tapping in along the side of my bed. All of a sudden, I could move my entire arm, and the next thing I know, I just sprung out of bed. And when I sprung out of bed, I fucking ran out of that room, you know, as fast as I could. And I don't remember much what happened after that. I just remember I wouldn't go back into that room for like weeks, you know. I was completely terrified that that was going to happen again. Now, fast forward a couple of years, you know, I'm actually, you know, went through basic training and AIT. And, you know, we're going through our advanced individual training. Now, there was this guy in our unit, and I remember his name was Cottrell. Cottrell was the only other time that I can remember sensing a demonic form in an actual person, okay? This guy, he looked like, he almost had like frog-like features. Like his face, his mouth was so wide. It was almost like lizard-like or something. And he moved so slow. It was weird. Like, it wasn't just the fact that he had a sense of evil. He had a look about him, too, that was just something was off about him. Anyway, I sensed this evil in him. You know, it just really made me uncomfortable. Like, just being around him, it was like this. It wasn't as strong as the man in the car. It wasn't as strong as that. But and it definitely wasn't as strong as the entity that was in my room. But it was definitely something that made me uncomfortable, and I tried to avoid him. Anyway, when we were going through our advanced individual training, we had an instructor. His name was Sergeant Todd. Now, this guy, this instructor was a waste. You know, he didn't do anything. All he did was sat. He didn't try to teach us nothing. He was just like, look, do whatever the fuck you want to do. You guys are all passing. This is what the guy told us. Do whatever you want to do. You guys are all passing. You know, just, you know, I'm going to be sitting here chilling. So Cottrell decided that he wanted to collect money to get Sergeant Todd a plaque to, you know, reward him for, like, his teaching us or whatever. And so he was collecting money from everybody, and I said, nah, man, I ain't contributing to that. Fuck that, you know. And so he looked at me, and he was like, what do you mean you're not contributing? I was like, why would I give money for a plaque for someone that just sat on their ass the whole time, didn't teach me shit? He was like, you for real? You're not going to give money? You know, he started getting like he was trying to boss up. I said, yeah, man, I'm not giving no money. That's it. That's fine. And I walked off. All right. Now, in the day room where we slept, you know, it was a giant room, like 50 people in there, bunk beds, all that. There was this group that went around at night, and they were called the Rat Pack. So if somebody had a problem with them or they considered somebody to be trouble, they would catch them in the middle of the night and beat them with these bars of soap, right? And, you know, nobody was ever, like, seriously fucked up. But, you know, it'd fuck you up a little bit. You know, people would be all bruised up the next day and fucking pissed off and whatever else, right? So anyway, I'm going to sleep one night, and all of a sudden, the Rat Pack is completely surrounding my bunk. Now, I slept on the top bunk, and I look down, and there's Cottrell standing in front of them, and there was probably about like 12 of them, and he's like, yeah, that's the one. He's the one that said the Rat Pack ain't shit. He's the one. So all of a sudden, the leader of the Rat Pack, I don't remember his name, but he came up to me, and he was like, you talking shit about the Rat Pack? So I jumped down off my bunk, right? Now, I've been in these situations before where you're completely outnumbered, and it's always the same effect. Like, something happens to me where I suddenly lose all fear. Like, when I realize that there's no possible chance of me winning a situation, like, in a physical confrontation like that, it always happens. Like, I just lose entire fear. It just totally evaporates. Like, I already know I'm going to fucking get my ass beat, so fuck it. So I jumped down and I talked to the guy and I said, hey, man. I was like, no, I ain't. I'm going to tell you straight up, I don't have shit against the Rat Pack. This motherfucker's pulling your strings. I have a beef with this motherfucker. And I was like, Cottrell, if you want to go one-on-one, we'll go right now. So he looked at me and he was all like fucking crazy, like upset, and just like eyes all fucking, you know, on fire and shit. So then all of a sudden he just like backed up in a slow motion way and he fucking disappeared, right? So I was like, all right, straight. So anyway, some time passes. I complete AIT and I'm actually asleep in my bunk. Now I'm at St. Croix, the Virgin Islands. There was a hurricane that hit through there, Hurricane Hugo. And we were down there for hurricane relief effort, you know, in the Army. And we're sleeping in these tents, and they got the mosquito netting and all that. This was the second time that I experienced the paralyzation effect. This time, I woke up, it was at night, and I was face up, lying on my back. And I hear this noise, and I'm looking around, and I'm completely terrified because I cannot move. You know, the same effect, just completely paralyzed, but I can move my eyes, and I'm looking around, and I hear this noise, and suddenly I realize it's Cottrell, and he's coming up to my bunk, and he's moving the curtains aside, and he comes and stands over me, and he's looking down at me, and it sounds like he's hissing. It's the only way to describe it. It's like this real guttural kind of, like, almost like a hissing, like, sound. And he looks over me with his eyes, and he's, like, looking at me, and I realize that he's smiling. And I just sat there, like, completely paralyzed, wondering, like, what he's going to do, and he didn't do anything. He just stood back, and he faded back. And the next thing I know, I could move again. All right? So when that happened, I jetted out of the fucking tent. You know what I mean? And that was it. You know, I didn't realize, like, I had no idea what it all meant. You know, I didn't confront him about it afterwards. I wasn't, like, afraid of him. But it was the second time that that happened, and it made me to believe he could have possibly been a demon himself. The thing with the paralyzation is I did research on it later, and I found out that I read the sleep book, this entire book about sleep, and there was a small paragraph in it that's about people waking up paralyzed with extreme anxiety, and it was just like one sentence, you know, and it said something about it's a rare occurrence, but it happens to people all throughout the entire world. So then I read this other book, and this book covered supernatural phenomena and monsters and stuff like that. And in the very beginning of the book, there was this write-up by the author of the book talking about this phenomena. And he was using it as proof that supernatural horrors in this world exist. Because he was saying that this phenomena of people waking up paralyzed with extreme anxiety and, you know, even feeling like a demonic force, like feeling as if there's a demonic force near them or in the room or even seeing things, has been reported around the world since the beginning of recorded history. When I read that, there was like almost like a wash of relief because I felt like I wasn't the only one. Like, this is something that, I don't know, it might not make sense, but just knowing that others have experienced this, you know, there's people that can relate to what I've been through, and it brought me a great bit of relief. Also, he gave it a name. It was called the Witch Haunt. The Witch Haunt. The Witch Haunt. The Witch Haunt. The Witch Haunt.
We are back. Are you ready for the final story of the night?
Hell yeah.
Here we go with the last and final story from Jump Steady. Now, most of us that have read Behind the Paint know most of what this is about because it is in there. This one, this time, we get to hear it from Jump Steady himself. This is The Road.
The Road.
The greatest adventure that I've ever been on involved a road. But not just any road, the road. Some of y'all have read about it in ICP's autobiography, Behind the Paint. Now this road, when we were growing up, it was the stuff of legend. Kids talked about it from as far back as I can remember. and there was rumors that abounded about the road. Some said there was an insane asylum on it. Others said that it was impossible to drive all the way through it and survive. And others, I remember one of the tales was this guy was driving down the road and he basically pretended his car broke down to spook his girlfriend. And then these lunatics dragged him out of the car and killed him. Those were the kind of legends that as a child, they just sparked my interest to no end. And I vowed then and there that at some point I would encounter and defeat the road. As the years passed, I basically kind of forgot about it altogether until I was about 17 years old. One day, my friend Matt Hapton came up to me and he was all crazy excited. And he was like, "Rob, you got to check this out. Last night, we went down this crazy ass road. It had an insane asylum on it. It had a cemetery. It was fucking wicked as fuck." He was like, "You got to check it out." So I was like, "Oh, hell no." And all of a sudden, all those stories came up from my childhood and I started remembering all the stories about the road and I was like, could this be it? I was like, no way. So I was like, all right, check this out. We got to go down there. It's time for a ninja mission. We're going to walk that bitch.
Walk that bitch. Walk that bitch.
So we set the date and of course it couldn't be anything other than October 30th at midnight, Devil's Night. So we gathered the strongest warriors that we knew at the time from our crew. People that we knew would be a super asset to help us survive. So we gathered my brother Joe.
Right here.
Joe Usler.
Yep.
Steve Lindholm.
What up?
My boy Don Lichto.
Ta-da!
Jim Symington.
Here.
And Nate the motherfucking Mac.
Yeah.
Now, we decided that we would each bring one weapon, you know, with us. So, you know, people brought everything from a moose bone to bow and arrows. You know what I mean? So we were like ready. Of course, I had the staff, which is my weapon of choice. We had about a month to prepare for the road. So the whole time we were in school, that's all we could fucking talk about. It was like whoever would listen to us, we were telling them about the road and what we were going to do, how we were going to freak it. And finally, these two kids approached me and they were claiming that they had been to the road. And I was like, you know, at first I was skeptical, but then when they started describing it, there was way too many similarities. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that they had been there. And they told me there was a monastery on the road full of monks. And the monks there, they don't like anybody to go there to fuck around. Anybody that comes around their property, they'll attack them. And they have shotguns that shoot rock salt. So they told us the story about him and his boy, you know, were down there fucking around. And they seen the monk monastery, so they pulled their truck over and got out, and they started walking toward it to investigate. Suddenly, they said they heard this whistling, because the monks, they took a vow of silence, so they can't talk, so they communicate by whistling. And they said they heard whistling, and then shortly after that, they heard the shattering of glass coming from their truck. So they ran back there to check it out, and that's when they got blasted by rock salt from a shotgun by these monks, and then they got beat the fuck down. So they were so enraged, they said that, man, they were like super pissed off, and they continued the story. They actually went back, found one of the monks' vehicles and trashed it and flipped it and all this other shit. Anyway, we were like, man, we were like, that only intensified the situation. You know, most logical people would be like, oh, fuck that, I ain't gonna fuck with that. We were like, oh, that's awesome.
You tell me
there's fucking these evil monks like patrolling the road and shit. We were like, man, that just made it all the hyper. It was like living up to the legend, you know. So anyway, it finally came to Devil's Night, and we all piled up in the 69 Oldsmobile, this big ass fucking car with a V8 rocket engine, and we rode down there to the mouth of the road. Now, when we got there, we pulled into the woods and we camouflaged the car. We basically took all this foliage and we piled it on top of the car so that, you know, nobody could see it or find the car. And then we stood there at the mouth of the road. Now, all of us were totally camouflaged the fuck out, even the face paint. And we all had weapons and we were in full ninja mode and the adrenaline was just surging. It was midnight and it was completely dark and we're just looking down at this long ass fucking tunnel. that's before us, just immense in darkness, and the wind is shifting, and you hear, like, loons in the fucking woods, and these weird animals and shit, and, you know, being from the city, we're not used to that, so we're looking around like, oh, shit, you know what I mean, and, but we were ready, we were fucking more than ready, I think our whole lives we were ready for this moment. So we started walking into the woods. Now, the first thing that happened to us on the road was we heard a CB going off. So when we heard the CB crackling, you know what I mean? Like maybe there's like a lookout or a caretaker, you know, basically watching the road for like people like us that are out there like fucking around. So we ran into the cemetery. And I remember like the first thing I did was like we all kind of slid behind gravestones. And we sat there and we were like completely still and silent. And we looked around and we were like, all right, look, check this out. I was telling everybody, we're just going to wait here. We're going to wait here until we see if the cops come or whatever. And we're not going to fucking move. Because we were like way deep in the cemetery. And I couldn't help but look over at the tomb that was the catacombs that was sitting in the middle of the cemetery. It was this big foreboding building. And I remember the story my mom told me about how she used to go there as a kid and knock on that door. And, you know, it was rumored they wouldn't survive if they did that. Anyway, probably about 10 minutes passed, but it seemed like 3 hours as we sat there waiting. And nothing happened. No car came, no nothing. So finally we were like, all right, come on, let's go. Now, walking the road is much, much different than driving it. You just feel unsafe. You feel exposed to all the elements and like anything can happen at any time. And the woods are so dense and so dark that it's as if like if somebody was hiding in the woods, they could just reach your arm out and grab you. You're like you would never see them coming. So the whole time you're like looking constantly back and forth, you know, over your shoulder, like expecting anything to jump out at you at any time. So you like, needless to say, we were gripping our weapons super tight, like white knuckle tight as we proceeded forth because we are super cautious. Now, the next thing that we came upon was the insane asylum. It was actually lit up. There was lights shining at various points throughout the woods. Like they were probably about, let's say, 50 feet apart. And so there was this fence that ran along the road on the left side that housed the insane asylum grounds. And then on the other side of that fence were all these lights just in the middle of fucking woods, you know? So we came upon this conclusion, I don't know if it was justified or not, that it was probably an insane lunatic had escaped, you know what I mean? And that's why they had it lit up, because they were looking for his ass. So that compiled with all the rumors from the past got us really amped up, so we quickened our pace to get past the insane asylum, expecting any moment for an insane lunatic to jump out at us. We crossed past the insane asylum. Luckily, nothing happened. So then, the next thing we saw was what can only be described as an old, ancient World War II bunker. It was shaped like curved, like a big curved building. And it must have been a part of a farmland because there was a barbed wire fence that ran in front of it and bales of hay stacked up on the side of it, like a big hay pile. But it was so dark we couldn't see any houses or a farmhouse or anything. It was just this old ancient building, a structure. So I said, look, I'm going to check it out. You know, I told everybody I'm going to check it out. They're like, all right. So I hopped over the fence and I started walking toward it. And that's when something huge moved in the darkness. And I looked up. I was like, my mind started flipping because I couldn't understand what I was seeing. But it was this giant form suddenly moved to face me. And I'd seen its eyes glistening in the darkness. And it was huge. So I looked at it. And then my mind started registering what it was. And I screamed out, "Bull!" as loud as I could. Because all I saw was these fucking horns. So I thought the thing was about to charge me. It was this giant fucking beast in the middle of the woods in the darkness, you know, just in this like by this building. And I thought it was about to rush me, so I started running. And I flipped over the fence like I don't even know how I did it. It was like a ninja flip. Like my adrenaline was going so fast, I was just like, pa, and I was over that fence. Anyway, we started looking to try to see what the fuck it was, and it ended up it was a fucking cow. Now, I didn't know this, but, you know, being from the city and stuff, but, like, some cows have, like, these small horns on their head, you know? So once I determined it was safe, I kind of went over the fence again. And then the cow was, like, moving slowly away from me. That's when I started hearing all the moo sounds coming from all the cows that were packed in the infantry-style building that they're in. So I got real close to it and looked in, and it looked like there was like 100 of these cows just all packed in there. I mean, maybe that's an exaggeration, but there was a lot of fucking cows just packed in there. So I went back to my crew and I said, look, test the bravery. We're going to survive the road. If we're going to be able to continue this mission, we have to fucking test ourselves right now. We each have to walk through that barn. So they were like, all right, bet. So we all hopped the fence. We went up to the fucking, the structure, and we started to slowly walk through in the dark, packed with cows. Now, it's no easy task because, like, as we were moving through, we started disturbing the cows, and they all started, like, moving around to try to get out the building. So as we're, like, walking, you're kind of getting battered by these giant bodies that are moving in the complete darkness, and we didn't have no light. That's another thing I wanted to mention. The whole time of the road, it was a strictly no-light policy. We didn't have flashlights. We didn't have nothing. We were in straight-up ninja mode. Like, we didn't want to give ourselves away. So we're, like, walking through this barn, and these cows are shifting, and we're, like, sinking in shit and mud. And it was crazy. So finally, the cows all strung out into the field, and we were, like, they were mooing, like, real fucking loud, causing a big commotion. And, you know, and basically spanning out, like, try to imagine, like, 100 cows all fanning out into the field, and they're all mooing. And you know, just like getting live as cows can get. Suddenly we seen this light come on from a far distance. When the light came out, we could see the porch. And out of the porch, we see this door open, and this man steps out onto the porch with a shotgun. We were like, oh, fuck. Let's get the fuck out of here. And we all start running. And we were like, come on, we got to get over the fence. Now, in the darkness, running, I didn't see the barbed wire. Like, I couldn't gauge where exactly it was at, and I ran smack into that bitch. And I caught one of the barbs, like, right between my eyes, like, just at the apex of my nose. And it just, bam, like, I saw, like, this sharp, like, white light for a second. And next thing I know, there was blood dripping down my nose in my face. And I saw, like, one of my other boys, he started up the pile of hay, and all of a sudden, he just sunk right in the middle of the hay. Boom, he just disappeared. You know, just like a soft spot in the top of the hay, and he was just disappeared. So at this time, everybody's kind of, like, panicking. And eventually, we made it all over the barbed wire fence, and we ran down the road for quite a bit. We finally got off to the side of the road, and we started catching our breath. And at that point, people wanted to go back. They were like, man, fuck this, you know, this is too much, you know. So I remember it was at that moment where my brother stepped up and he basically gave this really elaborate speech, you know, like a super motivational speech, you know. No, you know, this is our time. Why are we going to go back now? We have to fucking school this and survive this, and you know, you knew there was going to be dangers. You know, what did you think? This is going to be easy? This is what a test of a ninja is all about, surviving this road, like right now, right here. You know what I mean? You're just going to go back and fail? And he was just like, fuck that, and he was just getting all worked up. So when he gave that speech, everybody kind of like, it kind of inspired everybody again, you know, like my brother was always real good at that, like hyping people up, like, you know what I mean? So, you know, of course I stood by him, you know what I mean? They're like, man, you're all fucked up. You're bleeding from your nose and shit. And I was like, man, this ain't shit. You know, there was no way, no question. There's no way I was going back. So we continued further down the road. We traveled about a mile or so more down the road. And we were coming across this bend in the road, and that's when we heard it. It started really far away off in the distance, almost like outside of your hearing range. And it sounded almost ghostly, and it was a whistle. And when we heard that, we all stopped, and in the back of our minds, we're like, did we just hear that? And then all of a sudden, closer, like that whistle was like off to the left, and all of a sudden off to the right and closer, we heard a repeat whistle. And when we heard that, I swear to you, the blood in my body just froze. And it was at that moment when I realized all the rumors about the road were true. To me, everything that was spoken was true. And we were being hunted. That's what I realized next. That those whistles, and they kept repeating on each side of us from all angles, were the monks in the road. And they knew we were there, and they were actively hunting us. So I remember I looked at Don, and I was like, you know, my mind, like being a role player, like sometimes I can shut off fear and like think. I can kind of step outside of myself. And I looked at Don, and I said, Don, man, repeat that whistle, you know, so they think we're one of them. You know what I mean? And so Don went up there and he did some kind of bullshit whistle. It sounded nothing like what they were doing. And so when he did that whistle, all the whistling stopped. And there was complete silence, save for our heavy breathing and the crickets. I told everybody, man, get your fucking weapons ready. You know, this is it. You know what I mean? We were ready. We felt like they were going to come busting out of the woods at any second. So we started to pick up our pace, you know what I mean, moving down the road, and that turned into like a jog. We started running. You know, I just gripped my staff extra tight, and we're running down this road, you know what I'm saying, and looking around, and just like there's nothing, though, no whistling, no nothing, just silence. So we ran, I'm not even sure how long it was, maybe like 5 or 10 minutes, when we finally started slowing down. And when we looked behind us, all we saw was a wall of darkness. And we didn't hear any whistling. So we stopped and we were like, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. And we just really listened as close as we can. Now it was at this time, as we stood there on the side of the road listening, that I looked over and through the trees I saw a light emanating. So I looked at my boys and I was like, that's it. That's the fucking monk monastery. It's in the same area, like straight up. We're right on top of the monk monastery. We left the road and we started cutting through the woods. And we came upon a barbed wire fence. So we hopped that, went about 10 more feet, another barbed wire fence. So we all hopped that and we kept going real quiet as we possibly could be. And when we got close to the woods edge, we all dropped down and started low crawling all the way up to the edge of the woods. And we looked down. Now, the monk monastery, the stone building with the jagged edges, the jagged rooftops, was all lit up. And there was a clearing, like they had cut all the trees around it for about 100 feet in all directions. And it was in the middle of this field that kind of bowled down. So the monastery was at the base of this bowl type effect, like the land sloped down toward the middle. It's kind of as if a big meteor hit there and left a big crater. That's kind of how it was, but it was like grass. And it sloped down, and there in the middle was the stone monastery. Huge. And the tops of it were jagged points, and it had vines growing up the sides of it. And there was a gigantic window. It looked like a giant church window in front of it. And there was a little shed along the side of it. And so we looked down at this monk monastery, and as we watched, we can see through the giant picturesque window, there was some sort of ceremony going on. There was a monk in a brown robe, and there was a man in front of the window. And the man was standing there with his head bowed as the monk looked like he was blessing him. And the man was just dressed in normal clothes, like jeans and a t-shirt. You know, but he was like kind of bowing there, and the monk wearing the full-on cowl with the hood was like blessing him. So we were like in awe as we watched this, and clearly they couldn't tell we were out there. I mean, we were like far away from where that was happening. The only reason we could see it is because inside the window were like hundreds of candles. They're all lit. So we stood there and watched it for a while. And then finally the monk and the man left. And I told everybody, I said, test the bravery. And they were like, looking at me like, oh shit, not again. And I was like, look, everybody's got to go down and we got to at least touch the monastery. Like, if we don't do this, we're fucking straight up bitches. I was like, you got to do it. So they were like, all right, bet. So I started down the hill and I low crawled all the way down that bitch. Now, this is even before I joined the army. But I'm going to tell you what, man, I was like the best low crawl you ever seen. You know, stay low to the ground, and it was sloped down, so it was pretty easy actually to slide down the hill. And I got all the way down to where the shed was, and I stopped and I looked and I was listening to see if anybody was in there. And I didn't hear anything. So I kept low crawling all the way up to the building, and I touched it. And then I started hightailing it back. Now, as I was going up, I saw everybody else coming down. Like, when they seen, like, I had made it safely, everything was good, they all started running down. Like, not even trying to fucking front or low crawl or anything. And they just went all the way down to the base of the monastery. And I came back up to where, close to where the barbed wire fence was, in the same position. And I got down and I was watching them. Now, these motherfuckers, man, they were running all the way around that bitch, looking in the windows and, you know, just like no fucking care at all. You know what I mean? I was like, oh shit, you know, what the fuck are they doing? So then, after about a couple minutes of that, like just kind of like everybody going crazy, losing their mind, everybody started running back up. So when they got back to my location, they all kind of plopped down, they were out of breath and everything. I was like, whoa, what's going on, man? What are you guys doing? And everybody had a story. They're like, oh man, it's fucking crazy. I fucking looked in. I think it was Don. He was like, I looked in, I seen this fucking monk. He was walking down the fucking hallway butt-ass naked. I was like, get the fuck out of here. He's like, yeah, man, he had no clothes, just walking down the hallway. And then another guy was telling me, he looked in his window, and there was a bedroom, and there was a monk praying on the edge of the bed naked. So we like, get the fuck out of here, man. What are you talking about? And it's like, yeah, and everybody had all these stories, like monks walking with the brown robes on, the whole nine. So we were like, all right, man, let's get the fuck out of here, you know what I mean? So we started crossing. We crossed the one barbed wire fence. We crossed the second barbed wire fence. We got back to the road. We started walking, like, quickly. We were feeling a little bit better because we went all the way around that monastery. Like, it wasn't shit, and we didn't get attacked. Nothing happened. We hadn't heard the whistling, you know, in a long time now. So we're like, all right, we're fucking good. So we started crossing down the road, and all of a sudden, we started hearing these fucking shots. And as we hear the shots, you just hear, like, these pellets. Is the only way I can explain it. Like, these pellets ripping through the dense wood, like, popping off of tree trunks and splintering small branches and cutting through the leaves and shit. Like, it's just, it was weird. Like, it had this fucking crazy weird sound, and it sounded like it was coming from all around us. We just heard this popping and these shotguns going off. So as we heard that, I looked back and I said, run! As loud as I could, fucking run! And we started hauling ass because we couldn't even tell where it was coming from. And we just all started running as fast as we could, just like straight down the road, like the same direction we were headed, you know, just running. Now, as I ran, there was a small path that crossed across the road. It was like a, I guess, a four-way intersection. And as I ran past that, I looked off to my left as I was running. Now, this small path went down a ways, like maybe about 50 feet, and it opened into this clearing. And in the clearing, I saw about four or five pickup trucks in a circle on the edge of the clearing. And there, standing in the middle of the clearing, were these monks. A group of monks, all dark in the, you know, really dark in the darkness, like almost like silhouettes. And they're pointing guns at us as we're passing by and shooting. So the reality of that, that image of them standing there in the clearing, that will forever remain in my mind. Like, I will never forget that. It was one of the scariest moments of my life, and you know, it just felt like we weren't gonna make it. You know what I mean? I really felt like at that moment that we were done, and so we kept running, and my boy Steve Lindholm got hit in the leg, and he started screaming. I guess his momentum is the adrenaline was flowing so hard that he just kept fucking running, and we were trying to help him. We were like, come on, come on. He was all in pain, and we just kept running. So we ran and we ran until we were almost out of breath, like completely exhausted, and that's when somebody yelled, "Car!" And we looked back, and sure enough, coming down the road from the same direction we were running from, we saw a set of headlights that were coming at us. So we all ditched to the right side of the road, and we got deep into the woods, and we dropped down, and we were trying to be as still as we possibly could, even though we were all breathing heavy. And then I was looking, and sure enough, here come the pickup trucks, the same ones that were in the field, slowly creeping down the road as if they were looking for us. And as they passed one by one, you can see in the back window there were gun racks where their shotguns were nestled, and their rifles were like nestled onto these racks in the back windows of the cab of the pickup trucks. Now, the amazing thing was, right at this moment, I look over and there's Don Lichtel standing up, notching an arrow into his bow as he's watching these pickup trucks slowly pass by. Now, one thing I want to tell you about Don Lichtel, like, I've seen this dude stand up. He's an Hawaiian dude. He stands about 5'6" tall, and I've seen him stand up against muscular 6'4" ninjas in high school, like talking mad shit, like ready to fight him. So he was standing there with his bow and arrow, and he's slowly pulling the bow back. And there at the tail end of the convoy of pickup trucks is one pickup truck that is just tailing behind, and it's a big gap between the rest of the convoy and them. It's moving slower than the rest of the trucks. So we're all standing there watching Don in awe when suddenly he comes right up to the side of the road and unleashes the arrow almost at point-blank range. Next thing we saw was the window just shatter as the arrow goes through and embeds itself into the passenger seat, narrowly missing the monk that was sitting there. The driver throws up his hands in panic, and the next thing we saw was the pickup truck swerve off to the side of the road and bam, hit a tree and come to a stop. Now, when that happened, there was a few moments where we're all kind of looking at each other. We're looking at the pickup truck, and all of a sudden, this rage just overtook us. And we all got up almost at once, and we started rushing the truck. Now, by the time we gained our wits and started rushing the truck, they had already opened the driver and the passenger door, and they started running through the woods. So we gave chase. Now, I didn't make it very far. We kind of split up because the two mucks ran in two different directions. And one group was following the one guy. I was following the other guy. Next thing I know, I entered the woods, and I probably only made it like 5 or 10 feet when all of a sudden this branch just caught my eye, just like poked me right in the eye. So I was all in this pain. I kept running for a little while longer, and bam, I hit a bush or some shit, some underbrush, and it just totally knocked me off my feet. So as I lay there in pain, I'm like hearing this echoing of these voices deep in the woods. I hear my brother and my friends cursing out these monks, and I hear him shouting like, "Oh, he's over here, come on," and just shouts echoing through the woods, just mad chaos. So anyway, I found out later that they gave chase for a while, but nobody ever caught him. And it was kind of lucky that that branch caught my eye, because if I would have been running after them, I probably would have caught him, because I was basically the best runner we had. And in a way, I'm really happy that I didn't catch him. You know, because if we would have caught him, it would have been real bad. So after the monks got away, we regrouped back onto the road, and we continued down the road for a few more miles. As we came to the end of the road, we started to see sparse houses start to appear, and we started to feel a sense of joy and safety as we emerged once again back into civilization. We had made it. We had survived and conquered the road. We traveled for a ways until we finally found a payphone where we called our boy to come pick us up, who took us back to our car. When we got there, we removed the camouflage to find a note was tucked underneath the windshield wiper. When we read it, it simply said, "If we would have found you, we would have killed you." We assumed, of course, that it was from the monks. It was their last message left to us, warning us to never come back. But we had survived, so it didn't matter at that point, because we went home with a notch in our belt that we had completed our ninja mission, the greatest ninja mission. And that was a moment that will forever remain in my mind as the greatest adventure that I believe I've ever been on and probably will ever be on in my life.
And we are back. And that is the final story from Jump Steady.
Sure. I didn't know monks were strapped like that. That's just fucking crazy. Fucking monks with fucking straps. That shit's crazy.
Well, on a good note, man, I'm fucking I'm fucking with this bit strip thing that me and Gil Jim is fucking with. And I just completely fucking made Gil G completely contorted. Like, his fucking legs are like all the way behind his back. Like, his fucking neck, like his head's like fucking upside down. Like a fucking exorcist.
Damn.
Oh, man. It's fucking perfect.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know, man. Those are definitely some good fucking stories, though.
Mm-hmm. They hell were.
I think Jump Steady definitely, I think Jump Steady needs to put more of some multiple things out there.
Yeah, that was pretty dope.
The fuck is that damn noise?
I don't know. There it is again.
That fucking out of it, like it's like the fucking exorcist is like eat its way through the phone.
Yeah.
But there we go. Now Ghetto G's also floating over a fucking taxi cab.
Did he come back from the show?
There. I think now I'm officially going to share this one for everybody to see. But since we've been doing all that, maybe we should play a track since, you know, we got like 17 minutes left anyways and come once if I'm passing the fuck out. So, is there anything you guys want to hear?
Yeah, let's listen to this Halloween song.
Wait, did you see one of Halloween song? Mm-hmm. I could probably find one. Here we go. How about Rock the Dead?
All right, that's a good one. Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
end up in the yard. I stole the headstone from your great plot. Conscious and confused, see tomorrow's dreams or tonight's news. Fall into a hole in the sky, will I die? And over time I've applied with this life, love and lies. Slipping in the darkness, walking through my conscience. Like an android, I remain heartless. Underground and middle, know me well. Bring it to the white lights of the depths of hell. Walk through the time, flux hand in hand with clear mind. Thoughts are harmonious like the rhythm of wind chimes. Feel back the rhyme and examine the fruit. Rotten to the core, buried in their best suits. Maggots crawling out their face, eyes sunk in their heads. Throw your fucking arms up and rock the dead. No more. Release the stress from my jacket and let me go. Ill medication, got my whole body shaking. Faking escaping, but they gon' keep on chasing. I'm facing off with the world and the planet. Dig a hole, buried alive, like a goddamn it. It ain't a living thing, it's a no fuck giving thing. Bring the pain, and I'ma bleed with the rain. Insane, when I lead this bitch, I got the whole world screaming out, you ain't shit. Are we the wrong ones, you can bet. I don't know why you hide your face, cause I'm coming for your neck. If you get part of the plot, what you got? Should've cut your head off on the spot. A whole pile of dead bodies, I'm on top. Me and my man rocking the dead like, oh, now stop.
Cemetery, walk the grave digging, sacrifice another victim. You can hear me screaming through the trees in the woods. Hang myself on a higher branch if I could. Gotta get him out, gotta get these sick bumps out of my head. So I be rocking the dead.
Some of my best friends are dead. If you were to monoxide, violence is shaggy and evil lead. Serial killers from the west and the east. Of the damn motherfuckers from here to Great Street. Fuck it if you're missing some limbs and patches of hair. Not your bald head and throw your nubs in the air. I wanna see zombies jump and scream. Kill every live motherfucker in the crowd.
Definitely a good Halloween track, Russ.
Oh, yeah, that is. For sure.
fucking...
I gotta go get up for a funeral tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm gonna probably play one more track and go get me some fucking sleep myself. I got work tomorrow.
Hell yeah, for sure.
Fucking play Halloween on Military Street.
Oh, hell yeah, that's a good one.
I could definitely do that. That'd be the last track and go pass the fuck out.
Alright, for sure, man.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
There we go.
We measure things by what we are. To the maggots and the cheese is the universe. To the worms and the corpse is the cosmos. How then can we be so cocksure about our world? Just because of our telescopes and microscopes and the splitting of the atoms? Certainly not. Science is but an organized system of ignorance. There are more things in heaven and on earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. What do we know about beyond? Do we know what's behind the beyond? I'm afraid some of us hardly know what's beyond behind.
Yeah.
And that would be our final track. I'm going to go pass the fuck out. We'll be back tomorrow night.
We'll
be back.
No.